Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 19 for March 30th, 2007, bestseller. Here's Paul Thurrott, my Windows Weekly buddy, the Mac bigot, the guy who loves... Wait a minute, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong blog, the Mac hater. Wait a minute. You know, I think it's good, Paul, if you've confused people, but to this degree, you're obviously doing something right.
I'm like the theater mask with the two sides of the face.
He hates Mac, he loves Mac. He's just what he is, and that's why I love Paul, because he tells it like he sees it. As the words of Howard Cosell, I tell it like I see it. And and sometimes you're happy and sometimes not. For instance, you seem to be unhappy with the EU right now. The entire European Union is pissing you off. You'll never go to Italy again, Thurrott, or France.
Yikes.
Actually, we should say that you go to France every year. You certainly have roots in Europe, so I think you have some standing to talk about this.
I don't hate the EU.
The EU is after Microsoft, though. It has been for some time.
Yeah, and let's be clear here, you know, half a decade ago or whenever that was, when the
1998
federal government, when the United States went after Microsoft, I became very convinced that they had a good case against the company, that Microsoft should be split up. I still feel today it would be a better world if that had happened because, it would have forced two or more companies to compete more in different markets and we'd have better products for people to use, et cetera, et cetera. So when the EU started its own Microsoft investigation, and then about, I guess it was 3 years ago now, 3 years ago this month, if I'm not mistaken, came up with a ruling against the company, my initial reaction was, this is more of the same. I mean, they're not the only legal entity to do something like this. South Korea also has antitrust cases against Microsoft. Obviously, various states in the United States did in the wake of the U.S. Ruling and so forth. So my initial reaction was, wow, this is... it's going worldwide. This makes a lot of sense. And it seemed like it was progressing, on a logical track. 3 years later, I have to say, this is a huge mistake. And what they're doing is not only wrong, it's ludicrous. And it's just getting stupid. So I think they should just give it up and go home.
What is their beef? Is it the same kind of monopoly beef that the feds had?
Yeah, right. So, I mean, at its heart... the EU fears that Microsoft will use its desktop monopoly, desktop operating system monopoly, to hone in on other markets. And, specifically, going back 3 years, what they were looking at was digital media. They were concerned about Microsoft bundling Windows Media Player, apparently, with Windows, and with the server, and specifically the workgroup server market. This is what server guys might think of as unmanaged servers, servers that run in a non-domain type situation, that kind of thing. So you may recall, the EU forced Microsoft to sell a version of Windows in Europe, which they call the N Edition. Actually, it was a version for Home and Pro that was basically the same thing as the normal version minus Windows Media Player. And some of the other little APIs in there that are associated and so forth. They sold maybe 11 copies of this thing. Nobody wanted it. It was a complete dud. They had to do it again for Vista, as part of this legal requirement. So that half of it, I think we can look back and we can look at Apple's dominance of that market and we can say that was pointless. That was absolutely pointless.
Yeah, yeah.
The current issue is, of course, the server stuff. And Microsoft has spent the last 3 years now not complying with the EU's demands. And the one thing I do agree with Microsoft on here is that the European Commission, which is sort of like the antitrust regulatory part of the EU government, has been very vague about what they expect from Microsoft, but has been very harsh and very critical every time Microsoft has submitted something, in this case, technical documentation for competitors, that... they're not meeting their requirements. And Microsoft has said, but you're not giving us specifics. Right. You're not telling us what we're going to do, what we need to do.
EU regulators are notoriously bureaucratic.
Yeah.
And this seems like just that same kind of bureaucratic harassment that they've done in many cases.
This is like an episode of Benny Hill where the music cues on and the guys run around in circles. This is all it is. And some guy in a nurse's outfit pops up.
Yakety sax.
Apparently that's Nelly Cruz. I don't know. The whole thing is freaking me out. And I just, listen, again, I just want to be really clear. I really thought that the United States made a good case against Microsoft. I really feel that the EU has not made a good case against Microsoft. I mean, they'll come out every once in a while. I don't know what the forum is for these comments that they make, but you know, there'll be a press conference or something, and someone from a spokesperson for the EC or maybe even Nelly Cruz herself will make a comment about Microsoft that generates all these news stories. And you know, one of the recent things that occurred along those lines was they said, well, you know, you can look at Microsoft's market share in the server market, and you can see that it has grown over the past 3 years. So clearly they need to be stopped. And I don't know
they're successful. They need to be stopped.
Yeah.
There's a kind of a slight socialistic feeling to all of this, I must say.
Right.
And kind of just anti-corporate.
If Microsoft made crap server products, I think you could make a case that maybe something illicit is going on. But how could anyone look at what they've done since in the past 3 years in the server market, how they moved all these technologies downstream, how they've made it more accessible and less expensive and so forth. I mean, Microsoft server products are fantastic for the most part, especially their server operating system. And to suggest somehow that, you know, they're just, illegally riding on the back of their desktop success is ridiculous. I mean, yes, people are going to be inclined to look at their server stuff because of who they are and because they understand the software. But the truth is, from a competitive standpoint, they probably are the best. And but they're at least competitive. I mean, even if you're a big Linux guy or whatever it is you're looking at on the server side, you have to at least admit these products are competitive from a technical standpoint.
And they're not exercising monopolistic leverage, you believe, in the EU to sell.
No, I mean, listen, in the wake of Microsoft's defeat in the United States and then subsequent settlement, there has been a change.
They really have changed how they do it.
Of attitude at Microsoft. And in fact, I actually think they've gone too far. You know, one of the big fears at Microsoft for years and years was that they would become the next IBM.
Right.
You know, they were never going to become the next IBM. They were never going to be that, scared of doing anything. And they've actually kind of become like that, haven't they? I mean, the success of the US case in some ways was to make Microsoft less.
Pretty gun-shy.
Gun-shy. And certainly there are competitors now where people look at Microsoft in various markets and say, you know what? We're not afraid of competing anymore because them entering this market doesn't necessarily mean they're going to succeed anymore. You know, Google is kicking their butt in on the internet. Apple is killing them, obviously, in digital media. You can look at all kinds of different things. I mean, they're making inroads in cell phones. They're making inroads in the server, of course. And arguably, the server market is like the new third big market for Microsoft. I mean, but that's a natural extension of what they're doing.
Right, right.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I just don't see it. And the more they talk about it, the more they complain, the more they threaten Microsoft with future, fines and, you know, yada, 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 yada. The more I think, you know what, this has gone too far. It's too much.
Enough.
I just disagree.
The you. Ooh. Or ooh.
There's no me in EU,
There's no me in EU.
or something.
Now, closer to home in the U.S., the Vista sales have been very good, according to Microsoft. They're saying they outpaced sales of XP in the same time frame.
Right.
I mean, XP when it first came out. I mean, not now, obviously. I think
right.
Actually, XP now.
Right. Well, mostly because they don't offer it anymore.
It would be
interesting to see what would happen if you could walk into a store and pick between the two.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Because it's pretty hard. You go to Dell, it's hard. You know, you'd be hard pressed to make them put XP on a machine.
Yeah, you really have to try hard to make that happen. So there are a lot of issues with this. You know, Microsoft came up with this, this statement. They said 20 million in the first 30 days, which is great. But there have been some people looking at this and saying that, you know, when you really take this within context, maybe it isn't all that great. So some of the issues are, I don't remember the exact figures, but I want to say last year, PC makers sold somewhere between 235 and 240 million computers. IDC, I believe, expects PC sales this year to be about 253 million. So if you do the math, that's about 20 million PCs in a month. So
and wow, each of them running Vista. Right.
Yeah. So, you know, you might say, well, of course they sold 20 million. That's not hard.
That's exactly how many they sold.
That's how much you should have sold. So maybe this isn't so fantastic. The other thing is, you know, they compared it to sales of XP. And in 2001, when Windows XP came out, you know, the PC market was much smaller. And I don't remember that number off the top of my head, but it was smaller by an order of magnitude. I mean, like 100 million fewer computers were sold that year, something like that.
Yeah.
Dramatically smaller. So it shouldn't be surprising that it took XP 2 months to sell 20 million, or not even 20 million. I believe they sold 17 million copies of XP in the first 2 months, you know, double the time. The other thing is, you know, you have to look at the way, what does Microsoft count as a sale? I mean, this is not a sale as a human being would normally think of as a sale being someone walks away with a box or someone actually, you know, hands someone money and receives the product. Microsoft considers sales as Windows licenses that are sold to PC makers, which means they didn't necessarily go at the door to customers. Although, again, you know, typically PC makers order what they need and arguably had purchased licenses in advance and so forth, too. So it's also copies of retail products, you know, the actual boxes. And we know that very few people actually buy those products in stores. Most people, you know, get Windows with a PC. But one might expect the first month that that's going to be the big month for doing that, right? You know, people who are excited about Windows Vista will do that. And then the third category is upgrades ordered through the Vista Express upgrade program. And Microsoft specified that that was between January 30 and February 28th. So they weren't backstacking it. You know, it wasn't upgrades.
So that's, upgrades, that's people who bought a new PC with XP on it but got a coupon for an upgrade.
Yeah.
And so that's it. You know, I keep forgetting to send my coupon in. Of course, I have a copy of Vista and I'm running it on that machine. But I suppose I should just to get the disk, you know, and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That, but so those do expire. If you got one, you should look at what the expiration date is. I think it's different depending on the manufacturer.
So I guess the way I look at this is ultimately, first of all, February is not normally a huge month for PC sales. So right. I'd make an argument that, you know, even though it's 20 million on average, you know, they probably sell 50 million in December or something. So February is probably one of those months where, you know, PC sales are actually much lower. So 20 million is still pretty good. I do agree with people who have criticized this number by saying it's not as high as people, you know, as Microsoft has said it is. You know, it's not as much better than XP as they're saying it is and so forth. And I think there's an argument to be made there. But
well, what is the argument? I mean, it's high. It's higher than XP.
Yeah. I mean, well, but the market's bigger, so it should be.
Right.
You know.
And you don't have any choice, I guess. So that's,
no. But remember, you know, so 250 million computers are going to be sold this year. They're all going to be running Windows Vista.
So it's going to be a lot. No matter what, it can't lose.
So you can sort of nitpick about this all you want. But the truth is, by this time, well, by the end of the year, you know, there'll be 220, 230, 240 million people running Windows Vista.
Now,
there just will be.
Here's the question. Will they be happy, people running Vista?
Exactly. I hope not, because that would really make my job pointless.
Oh, really? You only succeed if people hate Windows. Oh,
no,
there's going to be
email
here now. We're going to...
No, wait a minute. No, that's not what I meant. What I meant was, if Microsoft does too good of a job, people like me, not a critic,
all of us,
someone who helps people.
Yes.
If Microsoft did everything right, there would be no need for me to help people.
There's no fear of that, by the way.
I'm not particularly.
And it has nothing to do with Microsoft. It's, you know, I guess really what you would say is if a computer is ever as easy to use as your toaster, we're out of business. Guess what? It won't be ever, no matter who's making the software, or the operating system.
You know, even my toaster isn't that good. So actually, I have.
But there are no toaster podcast. Well, maybe there are. Sites all about
more popular than this one.
How to hack your toaster? How to get more out of your toaster? How to run Linux on your toaster? No, I don't see that anywhere.
I bet you could run Linux on a toaster.
Nowadays, you probably could. I tell you, everything I get now comes with a Linux GPL on it. My TV set,
really?
A lot of my appliances have Linux running them. What did I just get?
That's excellent, because I just saw an article that was talking about how Linux is the de facto operating system for a lot of embedded devices, set-top boxes and so forth. And that's neat. I mean, you know, if you're into hacking things, I mean, that opens up a whole new category of usability.
Yeah. I think it might have been my Sony ebook reader. I think it's running Linux.
Really?
It's just amazing.
How do you like that thing, by the way?
I'll give you a mini review.
Please do.
I bought it because I found myself carrying gigantic volumes to Canada. You know, I travel a lot. Read, sometimes I'm reading big, thick science. I was reading a science fiction book that was huge. And I thought, why am I doing this? So I looked to see if the books I wanted were on. You have to buy it from Sony's stores. That's one drawback.
They're not easy to find.
Sony Connect. You can run standard PDFs, but, you know, I've bought a couple and the sizing's wrong. And so, you know, you end up buying them from Sony. So you're limited to what they sell. They have, I think, 30,000 volumes.
But how expensive are these books?
They're cheaper than the actual paper books by about 20%, 20 or 30%.
Okay. So unlike audiobooks, they're a decent deal.
They're a good deal.
The thing
is thin. It's very thin, lightweight. It's about the size of a paperback. I bought a leather cover, so it kind of almost even feels like a paperback when you're opening it, but it's much thinner.
Do you put one of those trash bag covers on it, like you were going to school, so it, you know, you could
nobody know
really
what it
pretend.
Is? Yeah,
like the Fonz was reading, you know, the math book.
That's it. That's what I need. Yeah, I'm really reading Mad Magazine, and then bought. It's passive. It's not backlit, and that saves battery.
Yeah, and that's why I'm a little nervous about it. But
it's very good.
How's the quality?
It's very good. The contrast could be higher. I would love it to see black on paper white. It's not quite that. The way it works is interesting. You know, they just charge the pixels on the screen to flip them either to black or to white. And it requires no additional electricity once they're flipped. So the only electricity used is when a page is turned.
It's like a book. You have to have lighting, right?
Yeah, but I bought a little clip-on light for like the airplane or a bed.
Oh, no, I don't mean like that's a problem.
It's just like a book.
The one thing I heard that really made me pause was that when you flip pages, it's slow.
It is.
And it's kind of jarring.
It does a little blickety-black thing. Also, the controls aren't as, it doesn't feel like you're turning the page on a book. You have to kind of push a button, which I don't like. Those are, I think, relatively minor. I'm actually surprised. I was able to get a ton of books on there. It's only 100 megabytes. You could put an SD card or a memory stick in there and add to that. But with 100 megabytes, I mean, you can put, 100 volumes on there. These, you know, books, text is not big.
So where do you get these books from?
You have to get from the Sony Connect store.
And that's like the their online service.
Yeah, and that's the biggest negative is you can only get as I said, it supports PDF, but I bought some science fiction PDF. One of Steve Gibson's favorite authors sells his PDFs online, unprotected. The font is too small, and I have to somehow figure out how to regenerate this PDF with a larger font. I will figure it out, or I'll contact the author and say, "Can you do that?" In many ways, I think this. You know, I'll tell you, And I've been reading every night. I've been reading on it, and it's fine. I'm getting used to it. So I think there's a lot to be said for it. Whether it'll be developed, I don't know. In any event, it's running Linux, ironically, which makes sense. I mean, you don't need much to get that thing going. Hey, speaking of running operating systems, Apple's Boot Camp. Why are you
nice
laughing
segue,
at me? You like my segues?
I like the way you move along.
Hey, waste not, want not. You got like 43 subjects you want to cover in here. We only have enough tape for 4 days of taping.
I would just, if it was just me, I would just sort of drift off over time.
Go,
we'd eventually be talking about photo albums and what I watched on TV last night.
That's what I'm here for, dude. I'm here for you.
Okay.
So Boot Camp, you want to talk a little bit about that?
I do.
That's the Apple technology that comes, it's free in beta, that allows you to run Windows or any PC operating system on a Mac as a dual boot system, and will be built into the next version of the operating system, Leopard, which will come out sometime this year.
I don't want to go too nuts on this because, you know, people get a little freaky when I talk about Apple, but I think there's a...
You're talking about Windows.
Yes,
you're just talking
a
about a way to run Windows on hardware from Apple.
Well, look,
increasingly, Apple's like Dell. It's just another vendor.
Yeah. Well, but they make really nice-looking machines. So if you've ever looked across the aisle and said, wow, I'd really like to run one of those things, but I need the stuff that's on Windows, you know, this is one way to do it. And I have run Boot Camp on my – I have a MacBook. I've run it in the past. I'm currently using Parallels, which is a virtualization environment. So I was really excited to see that they released a new version of Boot Camp that supports Vista, because that's what I really want, is Vista running on this machine. And I have to be honest, I didn't expect them to release a beta for this for current Mac users. I thought the Vista support would come in, you know, in Leopard, the next version of Mac OS X. So I was really excited yesterday. I took my MacBook in the den and, we were watching a movie last night. So while the movie was going, I was going to get this thing set up. But I never did get it set up. I had to repair the disk, and I only have one disk in a laptop. So that means you have to boot off the the disk that came with the machine and so forth, and you repair the disk. And then after all this was said and done, I think basically what had happened was the disk had become too fragmented and it couldn't move stuff from the end of the disk to the front. And Apple's recommendation was literally back up and reinstall the OS and then do it.
Yeah, in fact, I had to do that myself.
So I haven't done it. I haven't done it yet.
It's not ideal, but I tell you what, Parallels works so well that I don't really use Bootcamp anymore.
Yeah. Well, it does. I mean, I could almost, you know, the idea of bringing one laptop for someone like me who often travels with more than one is neat.
And that's exactly what I do. I run, in fact, frequently I'm running Windows at the same time as running OS X.
I have less of a need to be in OS X, obviously.
So Bootcamp would make sense for you.
Bootcamp makes sense for me. I would be in Windows a lot more than OS X. But, you know, and Parallels is not, I can only put 2 gigs of RAM in this thing. It's not perfect. Right, you know, you don't get the arrow effects and so forth. So. Plus, you know, they enabled things like the remote. So if you have that Apple remote, you can use it to control Media Player. I presume even Media Center. I haven't tried that yet. But so it's getting better, too. That it's not just that they're supporting Vista. You know, the drivers are getting better. They're including support for more of the devices and the machines, which is nice. Because, you know, Apple computers often come with the built-in EyeSight cameras. They have this, you know, infrared port with a remote for the front row software.
Is Apple hardware more expensive than comparable Windows hardware?
I have to reboot.
I think
it can be. I would say it's pretty comparable.
I think it's pretty close. In fact, there was one case when the Mac Pro with the dual Xeon first came out where it was cheaper than the comparable hardware from Dell.
Yes. Yeah, and
so
it was.
I think it's roughly on a par. I mean, it might be slightly more expensive. The reason I ask the question is increasingly I'm thinking of Apple, as I said, as just another PC manufacturer.
Sure. Well, okay. So, but I would just say that the reason I paused really was because on the PC side, if you go to a site like Dell.com or HP.com, you're going to have a lot more choices.
That's right.
So you can go down market a lot more. You can go up market a lot more. You know,
you can
Apple
configure
is a small
the whole
company.
Thing. Yeah.
Apple sells specific configurations and that's it. If you want one of those configurations, you're okay with that. Do a price comparison. I bet they're pretty close.
I think the truth is the most restrictive thing is your choice of video cards. PC users really are used to a huge variety of video cards.
Right. Almost. And you basically have one card, right?
A couple of choices. Machines, most of the high-end machines, maybe have two or three.
Or you
choices.
Buy a higher-end configuration, you get a different card, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, whatever you feel about the whole Apple versus Microsoft thing, I mean, Apple makes great hardware, and the notion of running Vista on Apple hardware is something I've wanted to do.
If it runs as well.
Over a year. Yeah.
If it runs as well, that's the real thing. It seems like it does. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Apple TV because it's getting a lot of news. And in a way, it seems unfair to me because the Xbox 360 got there first.
And to this day is actually does more.
It's got better high def. The quality is better. I mean, I can get high def television shows, which I can't do on the Apple TV.
Right. We've talked about a lot here, you know, we have an Xbox in our den. It's a media center extender, right? This is software that Microsoft includes in the Xbox 360. So in my home office, I have a media center PC running Windows Vista. It's connected to my cable box, and I record TV shows with it. And, you know, using this software that Microsoft includes, you can access it over the network from the Xbox. It's pretty seamless. I've never had any technical issues other than my, you know, Xbox 360 reliability issues, which is certainly a concern. That and the fact that the Xbox 360 is louder than a jet plane taking off, you know.
That's my only, the only negative. The Apple TV is silent.
It's silent, yeah.
It's hot.
Although it's hotter than a, you could cook an egg on this thing, but
actually, Scott Bourne claims, he on MacBreak Weekly we were talking about it, he says he's popped popcorn on it.
Awesome. Which is nice, because you're watching movies with it anyway.
Really handy, No, he only popped 8 kernels, but it did.
It is hot.
It's hot.
And when I wrote about this, and I didn't think people were going to understand how serious I was. I mean, this thing it's hot. You know, it's really hot.
Let me put it this way. It's next to the TV, and I'll put the remote control or something on it, and then I pick it up, and whoa, you don't want to put anything on it.
Oh, you can't touch the top of the thing. No. It's hot. Yeah, but whatever. You know, hey, it's silent. I'll take hot over loud any day.
I guess there's no fan in there, huh?
I'm not sure.
That's an interesting question. I haven't heard a thing. I mean, you don't hear a thing.
I don't think there is.
In a home theater, You got to give them credit for that. In a home theater environment, okay, you don't want to hear about,
I agree, but you know, it's typical Apple in some ways, right? I mean, why not make the thing half an inch taller? Put some vents in there.
No.
I mean, it would still be teeny.
It'd be ugly.
You know, I mean,
it'd
I don't.
Be ugly.
Why can't it? Yeah, I know. So anyway, well, that's what they do. So anyway, the thing is okay, but quality is decent, et cetera, et cetera. It works as advertised and all that stuff. I mean, my big complaint is ultimately this thing is aimed at people who have made an investment in Apple purchased, you know, content, whether it's TV shows or movies or music, whatever. And I don't know. You know, when you talk about a device that's going to sit in your den and you want to access content, obviously number one is TV. And I don't think anyone can make a very good argument that purchasing TV shows $1.99 at a time is the way to go. And the other problem is you have to go back into your home office or wherever your Mac is, go to the iTunes store with your mouse, buy something.
Right.
And then go back in the den and watch it on the
well,
TV.
You can buy a season. So I bought Heroes, and it automatically downloads every episode when they come out. I mean, I think that's how they expect people to do that.
Okay, but you can't trigger a purchase from the couch.
No.
Unless you have a laptop.
Which obviously. You can but, on mean, Xbox 360.
And I right, think really and I really think that's the big advantage here. You know, we could be watching TV and a commercial comes on, and I want to tape this new show that I just, you know, found out about just now. Pause it. Go in, you know, right from the Xbox, because Media Center Extender has all that functionality. Trigger the recording. It's going to record on my PC whenever it comes on. I don't have to get up. I don't have to go anywhere. Just, you know, you use the remote. And I just think there's a lot more functionality there. You know, so right now, the extender stuff is a little limited, because if you have Vista, the 360 is the only choice you have for an extender. They were supposed to announce in January TVs and DVD players are going to have this functionality built in, and they didn't, and I don't know why, but presumably sometime this year there'll be other devices. And you may remember in the Windows XP lifespan, there were various extender devices that were, you know, pizza boxes, and they were silent and so forth. They don't work with Vista. They if you're still running XP, Media Center Edition, they work fine.
That's frustrating. You can't upgrade those appliance-like MCEs?
No.
That's kind of
no, and they were a little more limited. I mean, one of the nice things about the Xbox version of this, the Xbox 360 version, is it has all the effects. So if you're sitting there with the Xbox 360 and you're using the remote, Media Center on your screen looks exactly like it would if you were in front of the PC. So the other thing is, and I think this is important too, is you have sort of a choice of various online services where you can buy and rent things. You know, you have to buy stuff from Apple. I don't know that I'm going to watch a TV show and never want to watch it again, you know?
Right.
That's true of a lot of movies as well. And I can go to MovieLink via the extender in the 360 from my den. I can rent movies or buy them and watch them right away as they're downloading on the 360. And that's a wonderful service. And, yes. I, you know, that's something Apple needs.
Yeah, and so. I was surprised that they didn't. On the other hand, the 360 doesn't have built-in Wi-Fi, and the Apple TV does, and that's very convenient. I mean, it's really easy to set up.
And I will, by the way, and I'll say this. Having done a lot of this extender-type stuff over the years, wireless to me was never the way to go. So my Xbox is actually wired.
You know, the Wi-Fi device, works really well.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's not wired. And it's funny because I have it synchronized with my Windows PC, but I have a Mac, you know, a MacBook that's also wireless. That actually has all the stuff I have purchased. So if I bought any movie, I've only bought a few movies, but I have a few movies. I have some TV shows. You can also stream them.
Yes.
Right. From other Macs or PCs. So wireless to wireless actually works really good. It works really good.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting.
Mm-hmm. Ba bum 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 bum. It's the bullfight theme. I'm just thinking we're having the bullfights. Xbox 360 versus Apple TV. It's kind of a little, I don't know. Hey, yeah. You know, I realize now while you were talking about Boot Camp, Apple has released the Vista version of Boot Camp. Now I get it.
Yeah.
We may not have made that clear.
I try to needle an Apple thing in every episode because I know it gets people going.
It really does. Hey, Xbox 360 Elite, talk about getting going. I mean, I just bought my Xbox 360. I guess it's time to update the thing already. What do we know about the Elite?
It's black.
Okay.
You know, it's a white.
That's Elite.
So it's cool looking.
Yeah.
You know.
Bigger hard drive?
It has a bigger hard drive, 120 gigs.
Ooh, that's nice.
You can also, if you have an existing Xbox or a different kind of Xbox, you can, or Xbox 360, you can purchase the 120 gig hard drive separately.
Oh, hallelujah. So I can upgrade it. Oh, good.
Yeah. Well, upgrade, that's an interesting thing. How do you upgrade? Because if you, I have downloaded a large number of arcade games onto my existing hard drive. So how am I going to get those off of there and onto the new hard drive? You know?
You're asking me?
Well, rhetorically, because I realize there's no good answer. I don't know either, so I'm going to look into this. But I think there are devices that you could plug these things into that will let you do this, but that's an issue. And also, you know, and one thing Microsoft does that I don't like, because I do have multiple Xboxes, and this would be handy for me, is you can only have your account on one of these devices at a time.
Oh, so you'd have to remove your account.
Yeah, so that's it's actually
does that
not
mean
horrible
you can only
do that.
You can only log in on one at a time, or you can't even
no,
have
you can
it
literally
on
only
there.
Have it. You can only have it on one at a time. I don't like that.
No,
because I'd like to be able to go from machine to machine.
Yeah, you want an Elite in the living room, a 360 in the bedroom, an Xbox downstairs. Sure. You've got it everywhere.
Maybe one at the foot of the bed. You know, for winter time when it's cold out.
Don't want to get out of bed.
Feet.
Yeah, warm your feet. I like that. You want a little whiner in the bed? You just put it in there. So it's gonna
quiet in here. Turn on the Xbox.
So it's $479, includes an HDMI connector, which is neat.
Yes, which is big for people with HD TVs. HDMI being a DVI connection plus digital audio in one cable. Nice.
Yep. I mean, only component out is the only high def output.
Yeah. I don't know if you looked at the cable setup they have. It's funny. You get like a snake's nest of cables with this thing. So you get the HDMI, but they also give you an additional cable that goes off the old port for just doing audio if you happen to want to, you know, pump your audio through your stereo, not through the TV.
Oh, that's neat.
And then, of course, you get the other six-headed monster that they ship with the 360 today. So you actually get all these unbelievable cables, plus you get a networking cable. And
all that for only $479. Why, you may pay that much for the cables alone.
There you go. Exactly.
$180 if you want the standalone hard drive. But that's all.
Go ahead.
The standalone hard drive doesn't upgrade anything in the 360. It doesn't make my 360 Elite. It just
no. And that's the other thing about the Elite is it does because it's the same. That's the thing. The Elite is not different on the inside.
Oh.
And actually, that's kind of a problem because, you know, as we've been discussing here today, the Xbox is really loud and it actually runs kind of hot. And, you know, there have been a lot of rumors, and no doubt true, that Microsoft will be moving to a more efficient version of the chipset, which will enable...
Yeah, because the PS3 is quiet.
Yeah, it is. So hopefully we'll get there, but this isn't it. I mean, from what I can tell, this is just the same Xbox we have today, spray-painted black, you know, which you could have done yourself if you wanted to, I guess.
Yeah. And HDMI, although I don't think that's enough for to spend a lot of money on a whole new one. It's a very incremental upgrade, I guess we should say.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about kilowatt?
I do. Somebody wrote me. I had posted something on my blog about it was actually a Microsoft promo piece about how, you know, one of the advantages of Windows Vista is that it has these new sleep states, and you can save money on your electricity bill by making sure that your computer is going to sleep all the time instead of staying on.
Right.
And, you know, this is true for anybody. I mean, Apple has excellent, power management, always has. Windows now does in Vista. So this guy got a device. It's called Kilowatt, like three words, like kill a watt. And it's basically just a little box. You plug it into a three-prong plug in the U.S., and then you plug your devices into it, and it tells you how much electricity they use. And he had some examples he gave me of some of the devices he had. But, of course, I have an amazing number of devices here. So I was really excited about this because one of the things I actually do care a lot about is, this kind of thing. I mean, this is, I certainly waste a lot of electricity, you know, so we've gone to that new style light bulb and so forth. And my wife is a maniac about turning off lights.
Did she grow up in the Depression?
Well, no, she grew up in near Rhode Island, which is almost the same thing.
Same thing. It's very depressing. I know, that's where I grew up.
I grew up in the same kind of place,
is,
you know, you know how it is in the winter.
It's
all complain.
Dark. Yeah. Dark
it's,
and cold.
It's, well, it's cold, and my father would say, put on a sweater. You know, and my argument was always, look, we all agree that 68 degrees is room temperature, right? Okay. How come when it's 68 degrees outside, I can walk outside in shorts and a t-shirt, but I can't do that in the winter here? it doesn't make sense.
It's freezing.
So, yeah, it's freezing. Anyway, so we're turning into our parents, I guess, because we're trying to be thrifty as well. But sometime in the next few days, I'm going to start plugging devices into this. You know, the Xboxes, the PlayStations, my computers, and TV sets and so forth. And I'm going to measure. And I have a feeling that what I'm going to discover is horrific. And actually, my wife made a crack about this just today. She said, well, make sure you don't plug in the hot tub because that one's really going to scare us. And I said, you know, actually, we can't plug in the hot tub because that requires so much power. It has a special kind of plug.
It's 220.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah, anyway,
wow.
Yeah. Wow. I'm interested in this stuff. And you know what? We should have talked about this before we just went on air. So I'll drop this bomb on you right now.
Oh, no. Okay.
Live. No, no.
I don't know if I can handle it. I'm not very spontaneous. Yeah. Right. Okay, go ahead.
Sit down. I think this is a great idea, and I think of this like a radio show, but of course it's not live, so people can't call us and say, "I have a question."
Right? You know,
we can't do that kind of thing, which would
we
be
could.
Neat if we could.
Paul, we can totally do that with TalkShoe, and if you want to do, in fact, I'd love to do a TalkShoe version of Windows Weekly whenever you feel like it. What we do is we just sign.
I have no idea what that is.
It's an online technology. We've used it now. We do Net at Night on it every week, and we've used it twice now with Twit, and it works wonderfully. And if you would like to do a call-in version,
I think it would
be
neat. I wasn't going to go that far. I was going to say, you know, I think we should set up sort of a formal Q&A type of thing. Because, you know, I get email every week about the podcast, and people have questions, and people will say, hey, here's an interesting topic for the podcast or whatever. And, you know, a lot of these questions are good questions, and I think it would be interesting to do that. So if we could actually have people on here, that would might be even more interesting.
Let me look at my calendar. This talk about spontaneous, we can do it. We can do it right now. You just have to set a time. Now, we normally record these the day before the show comes out on Friday. So why don't we do it on the April 5th? I'd like to do it a little bit later because TalkShoe, you know, it's nice to do it when people are home. So what if we do it around, is 7 o'clock your time okay? Is that, can you
and
do that?
And this is April 5th, is Thursday?
Yeah, I know it's family time.
I was supposed to put you on the spot, not the other way around. No, that's fine. That's fine.
All right. So folks, let the word go forth from this time and place,
and
we
Baron,
will,
it was
before this decade is out, do a live version of Windows Weekly. We'll do it at 7.
We do these things not because they're easy, but because they are hard.
Because they are hard. Ask not what the rot can do for you. So we're going to do this 7 o'clock Eastern time on Thursday, April 5th, live on TalkShoe. I'll set it up. And if you haven't used TalkShoe, go to TalkShoe.com. You can download the client. You can listen to it streaming. But if you want to call in, you'll need to use the client. So get set up a little early, TalkShoe.com. And if it works well, we'll do it. We'll do it more. I'll tell you, Paul, you're going to like
it. Maybe this is something we should do once a month. And that could be the deal, you know.
Windows Weekly live monthly. Sort of.
I have no
it's
idea
confusing,
what you said,
but we'll
that
do
sounds
it.
Good. That sounds great.
All right,
but this kilowatt thing that we've been talking about, you sort of came out of this. You know, somebody wrote it. I thought, what a fascinating idea, and what a wonderful device.
So you got one? Did you get one?
Yeah, I did.
Right. Well, I wanted. I made sure that I
bought it from a company in California and made sure it came over on a truck. No, I'm just kidding. I bought it as local as I could. But
so are you going to get carbon neutral on me?
Maybe. Well, okay. Not to get completely off topic, you know, but I had posted something about global warming recently, and I don't want to get into that debate here, God forbid.
There's
but
no
I
debate.
Would like to,
everybody agrees, except for a few wackos.
Okay.
There's no debate.
Well, okay. Anyway, what I was going to say was, regardless of your feelings about global warming, I actually feel very strongly that we should do everything that global warming adherents want us to do because it just makes sense for the environment, you know,
that's
just regardless.
Protect the environment,
So this is actually, you know, we do all kinds of things. My wife and I could probably start like an organic food, you know, podcast if we wanted to. I mean, we're really involved with all that kind of stuff.
Oh, you're a bunch of hippies, are you?
That's right.
I knew it. I thought you were wearing Birkenstocks there. I could hear them crunching.
We're just a bunch of bush-bashing, hippie,
right.
northeastern liberal media.
You're liberal types. You're living up there in Massachusetts. I know Massachusetts.
All right. Anyway.
Good. No,
I just think this is
a good
neat
thing.
So.
I think it's a great idea, and I want to hear the numbers.
Yeah, I know.
When you do them, I want to see it. Well, you could put it on your blog, internet-nexus.com.
Well, I think, and I will. And I think that, you know, the world is obviously moving to a place where PCs are more efficient, more and more people using laptops. I mean, there's some date in the near future where, you know, the vast majority of PCs will be laptops or laptop-like devices, I would imagine. And those machines use a lot less electricity, and I'm hoping to prove that. But, you know, I do have this honking Media Center PC sitting here, and
I'll tell you what I want to know.
Yeah.
Which uses more electricity, the Apple TV, the Xbox 360, or the PS3? Do you want any speculation?
Oh, no. I can already know that. I mean, the PS3 uses more than the Xbox 360. Yeah. I've read this online. The Apple TV, I'm surprised it's not solar powered. I mean, I bet it doesn't use anything. It's probably...
I don't know. All that heat's coming from something.
It could just run on the goodwill of the people using it.
That's it.
You know?
Goodwill.
I mean, I don't... I bet it doesn't use...
Visualize Apple TV.
It's so small. It's like it's half a Mac Mini.
We talked to... Yeah, it is. It's tiny. Teensy. We talked to David Colton a couple of weeks ago about Zune, and he promised an update, and I guess the update's on its way now.
It's out, yeah.
It's out. So
it doesn't do much.
Put podcasting on it, did they?
Well, no. This is not the podcasting update. Right. That's still to come. This one added. Well, you know, it's funny. There are actually two updates. So it's Zune 1.3, a new version of the software, but also the firmware. And the first time you go to sync your device after this has been released, the firmware will be downloaded. This is an incredibly long and agonizing process. I don't have any idea why it's so horrible, but it is. And once that's up and running, you have to install the Zune 1.3 software. And really, the big change this time around is that apparently people who have purchased music from the Zune marketplace have experienced some skipping issues. And this fixes that. And it actually improves the performance. Yeah, yeah. Minor stuff.
It's not a big revision in capabilities. It's just a bug fix.
No, but if you have a Zune and, you know... it's out there and you're not plugging it into your computer for some reason, it's worth going back and doing that because it does improve things. So no, it's not a big,
I got a little scooplet for you.
Mm-hmm.
That may actually give lie to what Colton told us. Apparently
give lie.
Apparently I've heard from a reliable source that at a Microsoft board meeting a couple of weeks ago, Bill Gates said, "We will not use the word podcast because our lawyers, all 500 of them, have told us it's too risky, that it puts us in a bad position with Apple. So if they do any podcasting support, which now I'm wondering if they will at all, it won't say podcast.
I think they will.
You think they will?
Yeah, so they'll call it Netcast or something.
Oh, I hope they do. I hope they don't get scared off. But, you know, that's the problem with Apple being so dominant in the podcast spaces.
Well, I have a different... So I haven't heard this, but my theory, based on what you just said, is that... it makes sense that Microsoft wouldn't like to call it a podcast because podcast harkens
sounds
to
like
iPod.
Which is they could call product. It a Zoomcast.
Oh, jeez.
But I don't know.
Hopefully it will be in a special RSS format that's unique to Microsoft or something.
They could call it a social. Now we'll know it's a social. Now we know what the slogan
means.
Social.
Welcome to the social. It's crack-a-lackin'.
It's crack-a-lackin'. Dell, I was really surprised. I was at the airport the other day flying, I think it was in Vancouver, I'm thinking. Might have been flying back into SFO, and I saw a big, it was at SFO, it was at San Francisco International, a big banner ad hung up in the airport saying, Dell Linux. Dell is selling not just servers now, but desktops with Linux.
And notebooks soon.
Is hell freezing over?
Yeah. Yeah.
What does it mean? Or is it just, so what?
What does it mean?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What it means is, you know, Dell has run into some financial problems over the past year. You know, this is a company that used to be the biggest PC maker in the world. They were kind of a high-flying, very predictable company. You know, you knew every quarter was going to come in and these guys were going to kill all the records and make all kinds of money. And it hasn't been like that for the past year. So
I wonder if it will cost less. I mean, you know, they say, Mike, you have to pay $90.
Well, that would be the point, wouldn't it? I mean, a lot of people, why not get Linux? And if you don't like it, you can just blow it away and put whatever you want on there.
Right. Michael Dell says comes from their IdeaStorm, public brainstorming.
Yeah.
70% of the participants requested Linux on desktops.
Yeah, by far the biggest request they got from customers, you know.
Wow.
There have been charges about this, you know, you know, people running up there to, you know, from the Linux community and stuffing the ballot, so to speak, but whatever. I mean, listen, a lot of people asked for it. Now they're going to do it. And I think that's healthy for Dell, just to respond to customers in that fashion. I don't think that, you know, Linux PCs and notebooks are necessarily going to provide the financial boost that Dell is looking for, but I think it's great that someone as high profile as Dell is going to do this. Now, there are questions. You know, we don't know yet which distributions are going to sell, and they said in the coming weeks they will provide more information about the specific distributions.
It's gotta be SUSE.
I would imagine
it's
that,
either Red Hat or SUSE. I mean, I think those are the only.
Well, or both, and, yeah, and maybe even Ubuntu. Choose. I mean, I could picture them. Well, you know, Dell. Okay, so Dell's kind of a safe company. They might go with one of the Linux brands that, you know,
that
has a certification
support.
Process.
Yeah.
As support, right? Yeah, because one of the things I would imagine is that they're going to have to charge for support.
Sure.
Over and above the, you know, the cost.
Right now, if you buy a PC from Dell with Vista on it, you don't call mm-hmm. Microsoft if you have a problem with Vista. You call Dell. And Microsoft will tell you that. So the same thing with Linux, unless they say, we're going to save you $90, but don't call us if you have a problem. And I don't think that'll work.
Exactly. So,
hey,
I'm intrigued by this, you know.
Did you follow this fascinating... I'm actually really want to get your take on this. Story in Wired magazine. Chris Anderson running in his long tail blog. Apparently, I just got the new Wired magazine. The April issue cover is all about transparency and corporate transparency. And a Wired writer, Fred Vogelstein, does a case study of Microsoft's blogging initiative about... Hello? Uh-oh. Bomber's on
Excuse
the phone.
Me.
Bomber's
Excuse
on line one
moment.
For you, Therat. Mr. Bomber's on line one.
Right. It won't turn off.
Hi, this is Wagner Edstrom. We hear you're about to talk about us.
Exactly.
We've got your
They're
phone
They're not that
tapped.
Powerful.
Well, I don't know.
We have the women of Wagat outside your house.
So Fred Vogelstein's writing this article. He's talking about Channel 9 and Channel 10, Microsoft's video blogging efforts, Channel 10. And apparently, they sent him a lot of material, Wagner Edstrom, Microsoft's PR firm, including a 6,000-word executive briefing memo from WAG-ED telling the executives how to deal with the reporter, saying things like, now he's digging for tension where it does not exist. We have to be hardcore on this point and communicate in no uncertain terms the level of executive commitment and so forth and so on. And what was interesting, I thought, in the memo was how they cultivated Wired into writing the piece in the first place. And, you know, there's a lot in the, you know, Chris is writing in here, and I think there's a certain amount of indignation, but frankly, anybody who's dealt with WAG-ED or any PR firm knows that these briefings are written every single time you do a story, right? I mean, did you read this?
This was, yeah, I did. A couple of things. As you just implied, it shouldn't surprise anybody
it's
that
a standard
company
operating
is, because Microsoft has, Wagner Edstrom is not their only PR firm. They're one of many PR firms, the biggest one. But, big surprise that a PR firm would actually be involved with PR. You know, I also have to give credit. I think it was Frank Shaw from Wagner Edstrom who did a blog posting in response to this and talked about transparency and so forth. Transparency is something I'm personally I feel very strongly about. It's one of the reasons I blog. And if you want to know anything about me, I'm out there. It's transparent. Right. I feel very strongly that you need to know who you're dealing with. There's that. Now, I have a lot of experience with this kind of thing because the one thing this article didn't give me, which is what I thought it was going to provide, was I thought this guy actually gained access to his
dossier,
his internal, his records. Now, this is something I've always wanted to see.
Because you know they must do that, right?
Oh, I don't just know they must. I've seen it.
Bomber was famous. In fact, Dvorak always talks about this. He saw it on a chalkboard. Bomber was famous for having in his office, a chalkboard of Microsoft enemies and friends.
Right.
And, you know, which journalists are on which list, you know?
I see.
But of course they're going to keep track of that.
Yeah. Well, so I, as someone who deals with Microsoft on a regular basis, I have meetings on the phone. We do live meeting now is a big thing. We meet in person, sometimes here at my house, sometimes at the local Microsoft office, sometimes in restaurants, or in one strange case in the back of a car, which was a little creepy.
That's a little weird.
You know, a little on the, you know, the door's locked.
We'd like to talk to you about your relationship with the company.
Why do you keep calling me Fredo? So I was at a trade show. I mean, this was years ago now. But there was a big stack of folders and papers and things on the table. And At some point, the guy I was talking to had to leave. Something bad had happened, and he said, "I'll be right back. I'm really sorry." And he walked out. And we were in one of those partition rooms they set up at trade shows, you know. So we're sitting there with the PR woman, you know, probably from Wagner Edstrom, and kind of chit-chatting for a little while. And then after a while, she said, "I don't know what's taking so long. Let me go see what's going on."
There so she was leaves. Her error.
Right. Well, I was actually with someone else, and he was this other person was from the magazine. He was across from me a bit and looking down at the stack of papers, and he looks at me and he goes, "Dude, this is about you."
Your dossier.
And I said, "Are you serious?"
Your dossier.
I said, "Read it to me." And he says, it said something like, "Meeting with Paul is going well. Paul seems, you know, positive about product and its opportunities in the market." I mean, it was like this really bizarre, you know.
So
I said, flip down a few pages, you know. So they actually had notes from previous meetings with me in there.
Sure.
Yeah. So I only got a little glimpse, but ever since then, I've always wanted, you know.
This is why, by the way, I do not take vendor meetings. I do not talk to PR people.
Yeah.
I see them writing those notes when I'm in a meeting like that. You know what? You know they're saying.
Sure.
You know, that's their job.
Well, I will say this. I mean, this is a whole. Maybe we should have a podcast about the stories from PR meetings, because there are some funny stories. But I approach these things a lot different than I used to. I used to be. I'm a lot more irreverent now than I used to be. So I'll walk into a meeting like this with some Microsoft VP, and I'll say, "You're probably wondering why I brought you all here today," you know. Or he'll ask me a question, and I'll say, like Dave Thompson did this one time. A guy used to run Exchange. He said, he goes, "Paul, let me ask you a question. What do you think about this?" I said, "Whoa. Apparently, you don't understand how this works. I ask the questions, and you answer the questions.
We are asking the questions here, not you."
So anyway,
I love it.
No, that wasn't as controversial as I was hoping it would be. So I don't know.
No, it was exactly what you'd expect, and what I mean, everybody who's in the tech media knows that they do this.
In tech media, in every
media,
that's market in the world.
That's what PR is.
That's what they do. You know, PR is about positioning a product, an announcement, an event, whatever it is, in the best possible light for the company that you're talking to. And that's what their job is.
People don't understand frequently why I really don't like to talk to PR people. And it's because I don't like to be spun. I like to kind of form my own opinion. And there's a cost to that. I don't have the access that other people have, and I don't get free stuff. But it just bugs me. I like to be out on the outside. I don't want to be on the inside. I let people like you do that, because you probably have more intestinal fortitude than me. I'm a pushover. I want people to like me. So if they say, come on, you know, you know you like this, I'll say, yeah, sure. I really like it. I like you.
Right,
I want
right.
you to like me. That's why I don't do it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't. I look at it as it's a necessary part of what I do. Maybe a necessary evil.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
And every journalist deals with this. And imagine if you're covering Washington, D.C., and you're in the Beltway, and you socialize with these people, you see them all the time, and they control access. They control your career in many ways. If you don't play ball, you're not going to get the interviews. You don't get the interviews. You don't get the airtime. You don't have a job. So it's very difficult.
It's funny, because I met Dave Carlton in this way. Dave was one of the few guys at Microsoft back when he was in the digital media stuff, where he would talk to me directly without going through PR people.
I love that.
And so forth. But, you know, I have various friends at Microsoft, as you might imagine, and I have actually various friends in their PR companies as well, simply because I deal with these people a lot. I get to know them personally, and, you know, they're not all evil, you know.
Guess who just came online on PR Skype? And I don't think it's a coincidence. Dave Carlton. So
really,
yeah.
Let's call him up,
Dave.
We'll do like a prank phone call.
We've done that before. Skype. Hey, so next week we're going to do this live, 7 p.m. Eastern time, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Okay.
That will make it, if my calculations are correct, kind of the middle of the night for those of you in the U. But I think it'll be fun to take your call. So we'll see you on TalkShoe.com. We'll do this live.
And remember, we can only talk about Apple.
Yeah, right. Our people get mad at us. you can yell at us. That'll be a good opportunity to yell at us. No PR people need apply. But just because we're doing it that way on Thursday doesn't mean that we won't do the, you know, then we will release the full quality podcast just as always on Friday. But
a free copy of Windows Vista Ultimate to the first person who can make me cry.
Really?
No. God, no. I don't cry.
You don't cry. No. Well, that's why you could do that. The only thing, right, it'd be kind of sad to see all these people trying to make you cry.
Yeah, well, just go to my blog. That's what happens.
Do go to his blog, internet-nexus.com. And, of course, Paul runs the excellent super site for Windows at winsupersite.com. He's also the news editor for Windows IT Pro and joins us every week to talk about Windows subjects. And I just really enjoy this, I have to say. It's a lot of fun. And next time, live, in front of a live audience. So, again, just understand that what we're really doing is we're letting you listen in and participate in our live taping, as we always do. On the day before.
It's like a bootleg live recording of your
It kind of is. And so sometimes people say, but the talk show quality is so bad. Don't worry. If you don't like it, don't listen to it. Listen to the podcast just as always. This is just a way that you could participate if you choose. But you are not required.
It'll be interesting. I'm curious to see how this goes.
It's going to be fun, and I have a feeling we if you seem to enjoy it, we will do it on a regular basis. I'd love to do it daily or weekly. I mean monthly, whatever it is.
I think it's a neat
every
idea.
5 minutes. Thank you, Paul Theroux.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.